comfortable speaking with you, which can lead to further quests in the future. Loyalty plus 30. Total loyalty plus 538.5. The villagers stood in silence, looking at the monument. Tears fell freely from more than one eye, and many paired off to hold one another. Now that the enchantment had been shown, Richter cast far light several times against the cliff face. The light was just enough that he could make out everyone's faces. They all stood quietly to honor the dead. After a time, one of the men who had been quiet during dinner walked up to Richter. Analyze showed that his name was Cedrin. It also showed that his disposition was distaste. It was the first time Richter had seen any of his villagers with anything other than a friendly disposition. Cedrin's jaw was tight with emotion, and Richter could see his eyes were red, rimmed with unshed tears. He stood in front of Richter, and it was unclear whether he intended to throw a punch or not. When he did extend his arm, however, it was with an open hand. Richter looked at it for a moment. He was wary in light of Cedrin's negative disposition toward him. He did stick out his own hand, though. Whatever was about to come, the man deserved to have his say. The two men clasped wrists. Cedrin spoke, his voice nuanced with unexpressed feelings.
Petal was my daughter.
He stopped for a moment, needing to compose himself.
Thank you for remembering her. I will come to see this plaque often. She did smile with her whole heart.
The tears fell from his eyes as Cedrin finally found catharsis. Richter placed his hand on the man's shoulder. He communicated in touch what his words would have failed to say. Petal would be mourned and remembered by both of them. When Cedrin had composed himself again, he spoke in a rough voice.
I promise to stand by you now, my Lord Richter.
The slightest bit of extra emphasis had been placed on the word now. A prompt appeared. Your heartfelt words have moved your villager, Cedrin. Sorrow had burrowed deep into his heart, poisoning him and filling him with hate. Seeing the beauty and innocence of his daughter immortalized in the monument has greatly helped him. Congratulations. You have gained plus 2,650 relationship points with Cedrin. Your relationship with Cedrin has improved from distaste, minus 2,500, to neutral, zero. Total relationship points with Cedrin, plus 73.
Richter nodded his head in understanding. More people came up and had variations of the same conversation with him. It was an emotional time, as many more tears were spilled and stories of remembrance were spoken for all to hear and witness. As painful as speaking of their departed loved ones must have been, it was also cleansing for the villagers. Facing their pain and being able to share it was like lancing an emotional abscess. Feelings of hate and anger were drained away. It caused pain as the spiritual wounds were exposed again, but it also left everyone feeling clean. After tonight, individuals and the community as a whole could heal. The stories went on for a while, and Richter had to renew the lights several times. There were a few more things he had planned to do, but he decided to leave it for another night. He slipped off to his room and fell asleep.
Chapter 8, Day 91, Kuralt 10, 15,368 EBG. Richter woke to a sharp pain in his neck. He tried to move his arm and swat at whatever was sticking him, but couldn't lift his hand. Panic began to set in as he realized that he couldn't voluntarily move any part of his body. At first, he thought he must still be dreaming. Maybe he had awoken in REM and his voluntary motion was disabled. The evolutionary defense mechanism that kept you from running off a cliff if you were running in a dream. Somehow he knew this was no dream, however. He was simply paralyzed. He heard a buzzing in his ear. Then a large wasp flew into his field of vision. The thing was as big as his thumb. Not quite as large as the hellbug Zetrix had summoned, but still more than large enough to freak Richter out. He made the connection between the bug and the pain in his neck. The damn wasp must have stung him and caused his paralysis somehow. As soon as he had that thought, he experienced another two sharp sticks in his thigh.
He couldn't even look down to see what caused this second pain. His helplessness was maddening. Even though he couldn't move his body, he could still think. Accessing his personal interface, he saw an icon that looked like a man with ropes tied around him. A countdown timer was next to the icon. 10. 9. There was also a second icon that was a picture of a head with wavy lines around it. This timer would take almost an hour to run out. Richter sighed in relief. Or at least he would have if he had any control over his voluntary motions. He didn't know how this bug had made him lock up, but what he did know was that as soon as this paralysis ended, he was going to deep-fry that buzzing bastard. In fact, why wait? Alma! As opposed to feeling the reassuring mental echo that he normally associated with his Psi-Bond connection with Alma, he felt like he had no connection at all. It was like there was only static in the portion of his mind that normally had a clear connection to his familiar. That's when he heard her voice.
My Lord Richter, are you all right?
Natoska, the female prisoner, came into his field of view.
What's wrong?
Her expression was one of intense concern. Richter just stared back at her. He was completely frustrated by his inability to move or speak. He was also totally confused by her presence in his room. Why wasn't she under guard? It didn't matter. He only had 3 seconds left on his paralysis.
Don't worry,
she said as she scratched his neck with something sharp.
The paralysis from the sting doesn't last long. Now what I just put into your neck will last a bit longer.
Her expression morphed into a cat-like smile. She straddled his chest. She was right. Whatever had been on the pin she had just scratched him with had added another 10 seconds to the paralysis countdown.
It was so kind of all of you to take pity on poor, poor Natoska. Why'd you even let me keep my necklace?
She withdrew the item from her shirt and pulled it up over her head. Richter stared at her with panic blooming in his chest. He kept his attention on the paralysis countdown. 9, 8, 7.
When you were in my line of work, I'm a professed assassin, by the way, it pays to have clever little items like this.
She depressed 2 different points on the central medallion, and it opened like a locket. Inside was a half-full vial of blue liquid, an eyedropper with a squeezable bulb at one end and needle at the other. 5, 4, 3... She kissed at him and then scratched his neck again. The counter shot up another 10 seconds. Richter struggled with his whole being to reach up and strangle the woman, but he couldn't even move a pinky.
My pet?
She turned a fond smile towards the wasp buzzing around her head before looking at Richter again.
Is wonderfully useful, but he can only hold a small amount of poison. At his current level, only a half dose at a time. That's why I had to administer the second poison immediately,
she said, waggling the blue vial and needle at him.
It should block any pesky abilities you might have. You should feel honored. You have no idea how much this stuff costs.
She traced her finger along his jawline.
You're worth it, though. I mean, who knows what the master of a place of power could be capable of?
Well, Richter thought, at least now I know what that other icon means. 7, 6... 5.
Now I know what you're thinking. You're waiting for your paralysis to wear off. Don't worry, though. There is plenty more where that came from.
Natoska scratched him again, buying herself another 10 seconds. Then she held up one hand with her finger pointing down and held the other cupped underneath. At the end of her finger was what looked like a small crystal claw. As Richter watched, she uttered a word of power and her hand glowed green. Then, to his motionless surprise, a green liquid began to flow at a steady rate from her finger into her waiting hand. 9, 8, 7. She smiled and scratched him again. Then, with deliberate slowness, as if she had all the time in the world, she dipped the needle with the bulb into the poison in her hand. A quick squeeze of the bulb at the end and a large amount of poison was sucked up into the eyedropper. He only needed a few more seconds to be free of the paralysis, but she grabbed his arm and turned it up. Then, with a practiced hand, she inserted the needle into the large vein in the crook of his elbow. The clock on his paralysis reset, but this time with almost 2 minutes worth of time.
That's better,
she said happily.
Now I won't have to scratch you so much.
Won't that be nice?
Her face took on a pouting expression.
Before we go any further, I have to apologize. I normally don't drag things out like this. I much prefer a knife to the brainstem. Brief flash of pain and then it's over. I am a professional, after all,
she said with pride, placing her fingertips delicately on her chest. Richter just looked up with impotent rage. If only he could cast a spell like weak charm. But even though the spell only had a 1 second cast time, it still required a hand motion and word of power. All he could do was lay in his bed and let this little psychopath continue her soliloquy. She spoke as if this was just a simple conversation between friends.
Despite what I would want, my employer wants you to know why this is happening to you, and what happens next.
1 minute 39 seconds, 1 minute 38 seconds, 1 minute 37 seconds.
I must confess that I told a small lie earlier about why I was here. It is true that Count Stonek hired mercenaries to find you. Incidentally, I agree with you about keeping them out of your village. They were almost all low-level trash. They were barely even worth sleeping with, but hey, a girl has to eat. Where was I? Yes, explaining why I lied to you. Like I was saying, those mercenaries were basically useless, but they did allow me and my partner, the warrior in the other shack, to blend in, at least until we found a way into the village. I must commend you on an effective defensive enchantment, by the way. I thought I was going to have to go all the way back to Eve and buy an expensive true-seeing scroll, but then I heard about your hunters firing at the mercenaries.
54, 53, 52.
After that, I had an idea. Why waste money forcing my way through the mist when I could get your people to bring me here? A couple of bruises, a little backstory, and then I was rescued and brought right to you.
She smiled happily again.
I feel like I'm bragging, though. Like I said, I am an assassin, and I was sent here by Ronan. You must really have pissed him off, because my services do not come cheap. Were you the one that burned down his hideout on the docks?
She patted his leg.
You know what? None of my business. You shouldn't feel the need to answer that just because I'm on top of you.
She giggled.
27, 26, 25.
Richter did the only thing he could think of. He allocated his free characteristic points into constitution. He hoped that it would hasten his body's ability to fight off the paralysis. It might also give him a few more minutes of life. He did get a 120-point boost to his maximum health, but as soon as he placed the points, she looked at him like he was a cute but devilish boy.
Naughty, naughty, little rascal, she said,
tapping her finger on his nose.
That's not just any poison running through your body. It's a piece of me. Did you think I couldn't tell when your body started clearing it faster? Let's just fix that.
She pulled more poison in her hand, drew it up, and then injected it into his neck. Richter screamed inside his own head.
That's better. Now where was I?
She started mumbling under her breath, head rocking back and forth. Richter realized that she was replaying the one-sided conversation to herself.
Top of you. Ah, now I remember. I was about to tell you what happens next. Well, after you die, I'm contracted to bring Tarad back to Eve. Now I know what you're thinking. How can I find my way back through the mist? Don't you worry. My little pet is immune to them. He's a simple thing, but I do love him so. Even though he wasn't smart enough to hunt and find your village, he is more than up to the task of flying in a straight line. I will just follow him until we are out of your mist, and then I'll be able to make my own way back. I appreciate your concern, though,
she said with a bright smile.
Now, unfortunately, Ronan paid extra to decide how you die. I've had to borrow a dagger from one of those men you set to guard me. I had a very sharp dagger just for this task, but when I decided to get captured, I had to leave it outside of the mist with the rest of my armor and weapons. No use complaining over what we can't change, though, right? Oh, you're so reasonable and agreeable. I love it.
The woman climbed down from her perch above him. She then loosened his armored pants and pulled them down. She grabbed his manhood in one hand and held the dagger in the other. She looked at him with concern in her face.
I hope for your sake this knife is sharper than it looks, or this might take a little while to saw through.
The guard's blade was barely sharper than a butter knife. The next minutes of his life felt like an eternity. She worked with a calm efficiency, not deterred or affected by the sprays of blood that her actions elicited. By slowly cutting through his member, she ensured a prolonged and, more importantly, slow bleeding status. This was why she was sawing as opposed to just chopping, she explained, with a tone akin to discussing the proper technique for baking bread. His health began to drop at a prodigious rate, but not fast enough in Richter's opinion. His most heartfelt desire was to simply die. Before she was done with her hellish work, Richter lost consciousness from the pain, but it did not save him. He came to from her slapping him across the face. Based on the timer of the poison blocking his abilities, he had been out for more than a minute. Unfortunately, she remained as diligent as ever at renewing his paralysis. She admonished him lightly for passing out. The madwoman seemed to take it almost as an insulting questioning of her abilities. Despite being paralyzed, she had been able to see that his eyes had lost focus. She removed a strip of bedsheet she had used to stanch the bleeding before scraping over the raw area with her dull knife to renew his exsanguination. Then she started sawing his genitals off his body anew. Richter was fairly certain he was losing his mind. The only thought that existed was the burning nova of pain in his center. Finally, she was done. His health bar was flashing, and he only had seconds of life left. The assassin had spoken the truth, though. She was a professional. She had gauged the torture, leaving him just enough life to suffer one last injustice. She manually opened his mouth and forcefully shoved his cock and balls inside. He began to asphyxiate as his own member lodged in his windpipe. Looking him in the eyes, she tenderly touched his cheek as his vision narrowed until all he saw was blackness. Richter died. Chapter 9, Day 92, Kuralt 11, 15,368 EBG. You have died. A blur of colors and the sensation of great speed, complicated by a lack of all emotion. He felt a great pull that threatened to dissolve the core structure of his personality until he felt as if he was falling from a great height with a heart-clenching stop.
Where is she? Where is she?
Richter was standing nearly naked in the center of the Great Seal. His head whipped back and forth, searching for the object of his rage. His scream echoed off of the vaulted ceiling of the Great Seal room. Another shriek came from Alma, coupled with a release of psychic energy that would have made Richter wince if he wasn't strengthened by his fury. He screamed incoherently. A thought occurred to him, and he quickly looked down to be sure that he had been reborn intact. Relief greater than any man had ever felt in history swept through him, but he still wasn't satisfied until he physically patted his package and ensured that both the branch and the berries were there. After that, it was time to go back to red-hot rage.
Where the fuck is that bitch?
There were several other people in the room. Sion stood with an arrow half-drawn and pointing in his direction. Hisako stood near him with a serene expression, but the tension in her shoulders belied the calm impression she was trying to convey. Sumiko looked at him with an expression of pure horror. Randolphus stood staring at his liege with an unreadable expression.
Where is she?
Randolphus raised his hands in pacification. My lord, please be calm. Let me clothe you. Richter affixed him with a baleful glare.
I know you're trying to be helpful, but all I'm hearing is, punch me, punch me, punch me in the face. I said, where is that whore?
Sumiko spoke up.
Lord Richter, I know you have been through much, but there is no need for that type of language.
I'm so sorry you're offended, Richter said sarcastically, spittle flying from his lips. But when a sadistic bitch slowly cuts my Johnson off, I will call her whatever I damn well please!
Hisako spoke up. Her tone was one of professional detachment.
She is gone. The other prisoner you had is gone as well. None of us know exactly when they left, but you have been gone for at least one day.
Richter looked at her in shock. A full day?
I've been gone a day,
he verbalized. His tone made it clear that he was speaking at least half to himself. After his first death, he had only been gone for hours, half a day at most.
Yes, my lord, Randolphus said. It has been a day.
Richter's mind was spinning. He remembered the inane babble of his killer. Something pinged his memory. Where is Tirad? He demanded in a rush.
Randolphus took a deep breath.
Gone, my lord. It appears that they took him when they left. The guards were found the next morning. Both are unharmed. They said they were paralyzed, and by the time they could move again, they were bound and gagged.
Lady Hisako has come back just recently, and she told us that you would return, despite... The Chamberlain coughed and turned away. Despite what? Richter asked with ice in his voice. This all seemed a delay in enacting his vengeance, but he needed to know what had happened.
Despite how I found you,
Randolphus answered, his nose wrinkled in distaste, but he gazed on Richter in pity. Does everyone know? Richter asked. He could only imagine the panic that must have swept through the villagers.
I was going to tell everyone, Randolphus answered. But it told me you would be reborn,
Randolphus pointed at Futin. He, Richter corrected absently.
A question occurred to him.
A question that could irrevocably alter his place in the land. Looking at Futin, he asked, Who is the master of the Mist Village?
You are, my lord,
answered the remnant's deadpan voice. Even though I died? Richter asked.
Your body may have perished, but your soul endured. I could not sense where it had gone, but your essence remained in the chaotic firmament of the land.
Is that where he came from?
Sumiko asked. Her initial expression of horror had not completely dissipated.
Is that what we were seeing? Pure chaos?
What the fuck are you talking about? Richter snapped. The stress of his torture and mutilation may have been a day ago for everyone else, but it had just happened as far as Richter was concerned.
Right before you appeared, there was a tear in the air. It only lasted a moment, but...
Sion was at a loss for words, unable to explain something that his mind rebelled against. Hisako finished for her son.
Apparently, if you die, your soul melds with the primordial stuff of the land. You came back through a rent in reality. As Sion said, it only lasted a moment, but in some ways it lasted much longer.
I was looking at nothing. Pure nothingness,
Sumiko said with a haunted tone.
But somehow, I could still feel that there were things in the chaos. What is worse, I know that they could feel me as well. They were hungry.
The elderly sprite was clearly having a hard time adjusting to what she had felt. A distant part of Richter knew that he should feel sympathy for the kind woman, but right now that was a very distant part. He had things to do. He had a companion to save, and he had people to kill and hopefully mutilate. He looked down at his near-naked body. His bag of holding remained with him, but otherwise he was wearing nothing. He took a set of small clothes from his bag, as well as a pair of pants. Where are my armor and weapons?
The armor you were wearing I hid in the armory, the Chamberlain said. I regret to say that your killer took your rings, belt, necklace, and bracelet.
Richter's jaw tightened even further.
Crom told me that he had finished repairing your other arms and armor, so I placed them in the armory as well. He and several of the other villagers have asked where you were. I told all of them that you went back into the lower level of the catacombs. No one outside of those in this room know what happened. We are here because he,
Randolphus corrected himself, gesturing at Futin again,
collected us. Apparently, he felt that you were about to return.
Futin had felt his return, Richter wondered. It opened a whole host of questions, but he didn't have time for it now. Okay, then. I need to get my arms and armor. They have a day's head start on me, and I don't know where they went, but I must save Tirad. He turned to Hisako. Can you help?
This man they took, he is one of your companions?
Sumiko asked.
Yes, he replied.
Then I can help you find him.
And I can help with the head start, Hisako said. Go and equip your weapons, then meet me outside.
Hisako and Sumiko walked down the exit tunnel. Randolphus walked over to the armory with Richter, and Sion fell in step with them. Alma dropped onto Richter's bare shoulders, and Futin floated with them. Richter opened the armory and saw both sets of armor on the tables by the door. He equipped his enhanced armor. A quick check showed that Crom had indeed restored it. Richter equipped his shadow dagger and high steel longsword. Knowing what they were up against, he went a step further. Sion, I need the shriek venom. The sprite stared at him for a moment, but then reached into his satchel. Sion handed over a vial of the clear poison. Richter removed the four dart traps from his inventory. He cautiously removed the dart from the device, taking care not to damage the mechanism. Dipping the dart into the venom, he received the prompt, "You have created Shriek Venom Dart. Damage 5-7. Durability 10/10. Item class rare. Quality above average. Weight 0.1 kilograms. Traits. While the poison coating lasts, chance to cause instant death. If death is avoided, still does 60-90 damage. 80% natural poison damage. 15% death damage. 5% earth damage. Per second for 5 seconds. He added the dart back to the mechanism, and the resulting trap showed the same damage statistics. Richter did the same for the remaining traps. He then did the same for his arrows and other weapons. The shriek venom was more lethal than he would have thought possible. It was somewhat unnerving to work with such a dangerous substance, but that didn't stop him. He had no intention of taking either the warrior or that sadistic bitch alive. He only hoped his enemies would both die screaming. The qualifier of, while the poison coating lasts, made him pause. It obviously implied that there was a time limit on how long his weapons would be poisoned. Not knowing what else to do, he put all of the items into his bag. It had shown before that it could slow decay. Hopefully it would preserve the venom. He checked his inventory, and the icon for each weapon and dart trap now had a green skull and crossbones next to them. Richter tried to hand the remaining venom back to his friend, but Sion told him to keep it. They all walked outside. Sumiko was waiting at the entrance with two sprite warriors.
Hisako is outside of the walls. This way.
The entire group walked down the hill and through the village. Several villagers started to walk up to Richter to say hello, but they quickly picked up on the serious vibe and peeled off. One villager was not so easily dissuaded. He didn't even recognize her at first, since she kept herself in such seclusion, but then he placed her. The damaged love of Tarad's life walked up to Richter with absolute panic in her eyes.
You have to help him. Please, I need him back. I will devote myself to you, Lord Richter. Please, I will die without him. I will kill myself.
Isabella fell to her knees and grabbed his leg, weeping. Before he could respond, a prompt appeared. You have been offered a quest, two lives as one. Isabella has approached you and charged you with recovering her love. The emotionally unstable elf has only one tie to sanity, Tarad. By saving your companion, you will most likely save this woman's life. If you lose Tarad, you will most likely lose another villager soon after. Will you reunite the two lovers? Reward unknown. Yes or no? Richter blinked and accepted the quest. Though anger and hate were worming through his heart, he made himself stop for a moment. He helped Isabella to her feet and just held her for a moment.
I will bring him back, he said simply.
Then he handed the grieving woman to another villager and motioned for Sumiko to continue on. The guards on the walls greeted Richter quietly and ushered him across the wooden bridge. Sure enough, Hisako was waiting in the field outside the walls, in the center of a troop of sprites. A large ball of light hovered above their heads. She was kneeling with both hands on the ground. Pulses of green light radiated from her body. The light spread outward over the surface of the ground in concentric circles. She did this for another half a minute and then stood.
I have found a resonance. We only need to wait a few minutes. Prepare yourself.
Richter nodded. He needed the time to see the consequences of his death anyway. Richter wanted to scream in frustration. His personal level in almost every one of his skills had dropped. The current level progress had been erased, and he had dropped a whole other level in each. That crazy bitch had effectively robbed him of weeks of work. His portal construction skill seemed unaffected, probably because it was about the knowledge he had, but that was a small comfort. The loss of his personal level alone amounted to almost 50,000 experience. He gave in to the impulse and screamed out loud. The sprites stared at him, startled. Sion just stood at his side. Calming himself, Richter forced himself to be analytical. He went through his status page again, line by line. He was missing the bonuses from his rings and other equipment. That, at least, he could partially rectify. He pulled other rings from his bag. He had one stamina, one health, and one mana ring, adding plus 34, plus 22, and plus 11 to each bar, respectively. He also equipped his amulet of minor mana, giving him another plus 17. It wasn't much, but it just might keep him alive. Richter stood in place, impatient to get moving. Only his own hatred of pointless questions kept him from asking Hisako how much longer whatever she did would take. After a few more minutes, she made eye contact and said, "He's here." Richter heard a thud behind him, and before he could turn, something streaked over his head. A massive wolf the color of forest leaves landed by Hisako. The sprites apparently had expected this to happen, but Richter had a visceral reaction to seeing an overlarge predator up close. He took a step back with a startled yell, drawing his longsword at the same time. The wolf growled at him, showing its fangs, but only for a moment. Apparently, it decided that Richter wasn't worth any more consideration. The wolf bowed its head toward Hisako so that the hearth mother could place her hand atop its snout. This was no small feat, because the wolf was 5 feet tall at the shoulders. As fearsome as the beast was when growling at Richter, though, it was gentle as a lamb with Hisako. She gave a delighted laugh as it pushed its large head into her, nearly knocking the diminutive woman over. It was clearly an affectionate gesture. Richter analyzed the large animal. Okami, level 22, health 540. Mana 70, stamina 1260, disposition neutral. Okami are forest wolves, descended from the great wolf Honshu. The wolves are masters of concealment in a forest setting and have an incredibly high movement speed. Okami are more intelligent than the average beast. This is perhaps why their social structure does not revolve around packs, but instead in an extended nuclear family. Hisako separated herself from the large wolf. She wove her hands in a complex pattern and spoke an incantation. A green glow enveloped her throat, and then Richter got a surprise that cut through even his anger. A series of barks and growls began to ensue from her mouth. Remarkably, the Okami seemed to answer. It wasn't a formal language, at least not one that Richter's gift of tongues ability could decode, but the two were clearly communicating. The interplay went back and forth. At one point, the wolf looked at Richter, and he could swear the damn thing shook its head. At the end, it bowed its head to Hisako again. She patted it one more time on its snout before turning to Richter. "He has agreed to carry you until you find your companion."
"Carry me?" Richter asked. "How?"
He had no idea how he was supposed to ride this monster. Suddenly, an image of the wolf running with him in its jaws like a cub crossed his mind. "Nah," he thought, "that's ridiculous."
"Just trust that he will take care of you," Hisako said. "He comes from a noble line, and his father and I have survived many dangers. That is why he answered my call. His name doesn't exactly translate, but you may call him Fen."
"Fen," Richter said in a half-questioning voice, as if tasting the word. The Okami growled in reply. Despite his trepidation, Richter did trust Hisako. He walked up to the large wolf. Stopping a foot in front of its powerful jaws, he looked it in the eyes. "I don't know if you can understand me, but thank you for helping. I need to rescue my friend from some very dangerous people. If you could help me, I will be in your debt." The wolf stared him in the eyes. As Richter watched, its hackles fell. Then the wolf extended one leg, lowering its shoulder. Taking that as an invitation, Richter ascended to its back. When the wolf stood again, he experienced the slight vertigo that always occurred when first climbing onto a mount. The loss of control combined with the power of the beast beneath him was a strange combination. Sumiko walked up.
When I cast the spell, you will only have one day to find your companion. That is its duration. Are you ready?
Richter gave a nod from atop the beast. The Life Master began a series of motions and chants. After a few seconds, the air around Richter's head began to sparkle. The motes of light disappeared to everyone else, but coalesced in Richter's vision to form three golden arrows. One centered squarely on Sion. A second was a golden triangle pointing north towards the meadow with the quickening. The third pointed west.
Can you see them?
Sumiko asked. Richter nodded, impressed by the usefulness of the spell. It was yet another unseen yield of having a companion.
Good. I have never had an occasion to cast that spell before, and I was unsure of exactly what would happen. Good luck.
Richter looked around at everyone that had rallied to help him and was moved. When he looked at Sion, the sprite threw him something. It was a pouch, and inside were several enhanced health potions and the bracelet of health he had given his friend so long ago. Richter nodded in appreciation. The +43 health boost and the red vials might make all the difference. Holding up his hand in a firm and solemn goodbye, he then leaned forward and whispered into the Okami's ear,
"He is to the west."
The wolf immediately leaped forward towards the kingdom of Eve. Immediately after, Richter fell off of his mount because he hadn't secured a firm grip. Landing on his back, all of the air rushed out of his lungs and he was momentarily stunned. Looking up at the sea of faces that formed a circle above him, most slowly shaking their heads at him, he thought to himself, "That was some JV volleyball shit. Get it together, Richter." Chapter 10, Day 92, Kuralt 11, 15,368 EBG. Richter got his shit together. Getting back on the Okami, he took a firm grip and the animal took off again. The sensation of riding was like nothing he'd experienced before. He had been on a horse in his old Earth life. A canter was jarring and a gallop could be thrilling. This was no comparison. The Okami moved like the wind. With each lope of its body, it extended one front leg and then the other. The back legs moved forward almost as one. The disjointed movement made the animal's back rise and fall like a wave. Only with an intensely strong grip did Richter avoid falling off again. He shifted his weight forward and back, trying to keep up with the wolf's movement, but with every leap it made, Richter felt himself getting closer to falling again. Finally, he found the sweet spot. Just behind the wolf's shoulders was a point that barely moved as it ran. He realized he had been working against the wolf with his constant adjustments. Instead, he focused on staying in that one spot and just following the wolf's own natural rhythm. The Okami looked back for a second, and Richter could swear it gave a head nod. Without him fighting it, the green wolf's speed increased even further. Learning to work with the wolf granted Richter a new prompt. Congratulations, you have learned the subskill Lupine Riding. Using a wolf or warg as a mount is not easy. If you can learn the knack, however, you can become a force to be reckoned with. +1% mounted speed on lupine mounts. +1% attack and defense for both mount and rider. Lupine Riding is a subskill of riding. As you have learned this subskill, you have also learned the skill Riding. Congratulations, you have learned the skill Riding. There is no greater bond than that between a man and his mount. +2% mounted speed. +2% sureness of seat. They ran through the night and into the morning. The mists were quickly left behind. Once he had learned to keep his seat, he cast haste on the wolf periodically. The first time he did it, the Okami looked at him in curiosity before just enjoying the boost of speed. Alma did the same. At that point, Futin began to flag behind, but the problem was easily fixed. The remnant simply floated over to Richter and he held it between his chest and the Okami's back. The entire time he rode, his thoughts were dominated by only two goals. He had to save Tirad, and he had to end that sadistic assassin's life. Richter had initially been concerned that his quarry might have had a ship waiting, but because he couldn't do anything about it either way, he shut it from his mind. He would not stop until he had done what needed to be done. The gold arrows remained in Richter's vision. The one he followed pointed west and partly south. After hours of running, the other two pointed almost directly behind him. As he and the Okami sped through the forest, he occasionally yelled course corrections into the wolf's ear. His plan was not to simply rush in and attack. As driven as he was, Richter had not abandoned all good sense. An unplanned battle with two killers did not bode well for either him or Tarad's long-term ability to keep breathing. No, he had to be smarter. The problem was that, as wonderfully useful as Sumiko's spell was, it didn't give him any idea as to how much distance remained. If he mistakenly stumbled into the three of them, Ronan's hired goons could just slit Tarad's throat. He planned to circle in front of them and carefully pick the terrain of the encounter. Occasionally, Richter looked around for his familiar. He was always reassured to see her flying nearby. Though the Okami was fast, the Dragonling didn't have to deal with issues of topography and so easily kept pace. With each of the wolf's strides, Richter prayed that they were closing the gap. The sky lightened after several hours, heralding the coming of the dawn. As they crested a large hill, Richter could see the molten crown of the sun peeking over the trees in the distance. They kept running. The sun was nearly overhead when the gold arrow indicating Tarav's direction began to slowly shift farther to the south. Excited that they were closing in, Richter leaned further over the wolf's neck and told him to continue straight. Over the next hour, they continued to head due west, and the arrow continued to rotate counterclockwise. Finally, it started to point behind him to the east. He had passed his quarry. When he saw that, Richter shouted a direction into the Okami's ear, and the wolf turned and began running to the southwest. For the next 20 minutes, they sped through the trees on the new heading. When Richter finally asked the Okami to stop, they were several miles ahead of the point where they had changed direction. The wolf slowed to a halt, barely winded. The animal's stamina was incredible. Richter didn't have time to appreciate the remarkable beast, though. He was painfully aware that the location spell had a finite time limit. He had to find the right ambush point now. While they had been moving, Richter had been consulting his map. It seemed clear that Natasha and her compatriot were following a specific river towards Eve. It generally was easier to travel along a waterway than trying to cross through unbroken wilderness. The river also offered a much better line of sight than trying to see through the large trees. Richter kept scrolling along the river. He hadn't been through this particular part of the forest before, so everything on the map was still depicted in black and white. He examined the topography in detail, praying that he could find the perfect spot. Finally, he smiled. "This just my work," he thought. He had to see for himself, though. He couldn't hang his hopes on an old map. At his prompting, the Okami resumed running. Richter watched his map gain color as it traced his position. The elevation increased slightly, and then Richter saw what he was looking for. The river had widened by this point to be 20 yards across. The flow had adopted a mild amount of turbulence. It wasn't impassable if his quarry decided to cross, but the waterway was prohibitive enough that no one would choose to cross without a good reason. The trail climbed up a hill until it was 30 yards above the river, and a second small 20-foot-high cliff rose on the right, narrowing the trail to only 5 feet across. It was basically the perfect choke point. Richter figured he had, at most, 2 hours before Natasha and her warrior reached his position with Tarad. He had to prepare the scene and then ensure they didn't deviate from the river. Richter dismounted at the western end of the short passage. The entire choke point couldn't be more than 30 paces long. His plan rested on setting traps and then driving the two into them. The problem was that he couldn't risk harming Tarad. A tree had fallen from the ledge above the passage, about 20 yards up the hill. It now made an almost 45-degree angle over the path. They would either have to go over the trunk or climb under. Richter was fairly certain which they would pick. It would just be ludicrous to climb over a tree with a large drop waiting for you if you slipped. That was where Richter decided to place the sticky trap. Even if Tarad was caught in it, his companion wouldn't suffer any real damage. He connected the trigger to a wire that he strung along behind a vine. When the vine was moved, the trap would deploy. The dart traps were more difficult. There was just no way he could predict a place that he could be sure that Tarad wouldn't be hit. He decided to place them at the end of the passage. If his enemies rushed forward, it was unlikely that Tirad would be leading. It was still a gamble, but Richter was positive that a fate worse than death awaited his companion if he was taken back to Ronan. Risks had to be taken. He didn't use his shrink trap. He just didn't see how it could help. Same with the razor wire traps. He didn't need to slow anyone down. He could already outrace them on the Okami. The adhesive fire acid trap captured his attention, though. If he could separate the glass sphere holding the acid, he'd basically have a Molotov cocktail. When he tried to dismantle the trap, though, a prompt appeared. You lack the crafting level to successfully dismantle this trap. You may continue to try and remove a component, but you have a high chance of destroying the object and/or triggering the trap. Richter froze, his hands on the device. He carefully placed the object back into his bag. His head turned east, and his eyes glared with a baleful intent. It was time to stalk his prey. His analysis of the Okami had said they were naturally skilled at concealment. It was easy to believe looking at the huge wolf's leaf-colored pelt. He bid Futin to turn invisible and had Alma fly high above. Richter mounted his steed. He oriented the gold triangle in his vision just to the right of being dead on. A whispered word, and the Okami moved forward at an easy lope. Richter couldn't be sure how much noise they had made at top speed. All he had heard was the wind rushing past his ears. Now, though, they moved forward at an easy lope and in absolute silence. Richter activated stealth. He looked above, but couldn't see Alma flying amidst the canopy above. He felt reassured. If he couldn't detect his familiar's movements, it was a good bet that his enemies wouldn't detect her either. He kept the same pace until the arrow started turning in his vision again. Then, he slowed the Okami to a walk. The wolf ghosted through the trees, almost more wraith than flesh-and-blood creature. After a few minutes, he heard a woman's voice that made his heart beat rapidly, not in love, but in hate.
Oh, sweetling, why do you make us hurt you so much? I mean, I do enjoy seeing you bleed. It's such a pretty shade of red, but I don't know why you would like it. Are you insane? I do hear that it happens quite often to men in captivity.
Will you shut up? Orvin shouted. I can't keep hearing your inane babble. And you, keep walking or I'll teach you another lesson.
Richter heard a smacking sound, followed by a grunt of pain. For a few seconds, the only sounds were the trio walking through the woods, occasionally snapping a branch in their passing.
I mean, if you bled different colors sometimes, I could understand why you would want to be hurt. Who wouldn't want the surprise of seeing a vibrant shade of orange or a plucky purple liquid coming out of them? Oh, what if you bled pink? I love pink! I had a pink sweater once.
She kept up with her insane stream of consciousness. After listening for only a few minutes, Richter could understand the frustration of the warrior. He almost sympathized with Orvin, but then he decided to just brutally butcher the man instead. Richter followed along silently no more than 10 to 20 yards away. The group was often out of his line of sight as trees, bushes, and scrub came between them. It almost wouldn't have mattered if only 5 feet separated the two parties, because both he and the wolf were indistinguishable from the forest around them. Richter wasn't willing to take the chance, though. Occasionally, he did catch sight of each of the party he was stalking through the large trees. Tirad was bruised and bloodied, but still able to walk, albeit with a small limp. That helped to explain the group's somewhat slow pace. They must have been overzealous with their treatment of the former innkeeper and hobbled him. It was ironic that Tirad's bad leg just might save his life. Richter was also able to catch occasional glimpses of both the assassin and warrior. He was displeased to see that both of Tirad's captors were well-armed and armored. They must have hidden a cache of equipment outside of the mists. As they fled the village, it would have been a simple matter to stop and gear up. It was going to make taking them out more difficult, but Richter wasn't deterred. There was work to be done. The two groups traveled together, though only half of them knew it. With every step forward, the need for revenge grew stronger in Richter until it outshone even his goal of saving Tirad. His fingers tingled in anticipation. He imagined wrapping his hands around her throat, slowly tightening, her eyes bulging until a vessel broke and flooded one white globe with blood. The Okami stopped walking. The lack of movement shook Richter from his dark musings. The wolf had recognized the waking of another predator, one that happened to be riding on its back. It instinctually wanted to protect itself from a new potential threat, but was confused because it had also been charged with protecting this human. Richter recognized the tenseness of the Okami and forced himself to calm down. It was like forcing a thundercloud through a strainer, but he finally controlled his fury. The wolf began walking again. Richter knew he couldn't control himself while continuing to spy on his quarry. They were close enough that he could assume that the three would continue straight into his kill box. He moved forward and prepared for the fight to come. Richter situated himself on the cliff above the traps. He sent Futin back to follow the group invisibly. The remnant would come warn him when they were close. Richter removed his weapons from his bag, pleased to see they still maintained their poisoned status. Alma alighted upon his shoulders. Richter took 3 potions of clarity out of his bag. He drank one and fed another to Alma. Then he looked at the Okami. "I'm not sure how much you understand," he said softly, "or if you intend to help me, but I'm going to kill the people who took my friend. Whatever you decide to do, thank you for getting me here. I would like to offer this as a thank you. It will increase any experience you gain. Will you take it?" The wolf looked at him. Its lupine expression was as inscrutable as a sphinx, but when he was done talking, it nudged his hand with his head. Taking this as a good sign, he then realized that giving the wolf the potion could be difficult. None of the leaves on the nearby trees were large enough to serve as an impromptu bowl, and he didn't have any utensils in his bag. Ultimately, he just steeled himself and formed his hands into a cup and poured the precious liquid into it. Praying the Okami was smart enough to understand, he moved his upturned palm towards the forest hunter. When the wolf lapped the potion up, Richter exhaled in relief. The wolf's tongue was rough like wet sandpaper. Not unpleasant, but he still quickly took his hand away from the predator's mouth, relieved the process was done. After that, he cast the buffs that he could and settled in to wait. Before long, Richter heard Futin's seemingly disembodied voice saying that the group was close. When they entered his field of vision, he gave a grim grin. Their time of reckoning had come. He knocked an arrow to his bow, but didn't draw it. The three walked forward. Orvin led his party, with Tirad a few steps behind and Natasha bringing up the rear. The warrior frowned at seeing the narrowing of the path up ahead, further complicated by the fallen tree, but didn't pause overly long. After a quick look left at the choppy river water and right at the jumbled forest terrain, he kept walking forward. Reaching the site of the sticky trap, he looked over and under the log. Richter held his breath for a moment, willing the man to go under and trigger the trap. Even his heart felt like it paused mid-beat. With a relaxing exhale, he watched the warrior push the vine with the tripwire. A host of sticky threads shot out to ensnare all three. Richter immediately began imbuing his arrow. Killing his enemies should be like shooting fish in a barrel. Richter was wrong. As soon as the trap was triggered, Orvin roared in anger. He tried to reach for his sword to cut himself free, but the webs effectively cocooned him. Tirad looked up and about with a detached surprise. Both men were incapacitated. Natasha, on the other hand, showed exceptional agility by flipping backwards into a series of handsprings. Her quick reflexes saved her from the trap. No matter how crazy she might be, she definitely had skills. Richter still didn't understand how her level had appeared so low when he initially analyzed her. He quickly did so again and was shocked by what he found. Name: Sunaray. Half wood elf, half human. Level 33. Health 450, mana 290, stamina 370. Racial blends are erratic in their disposition. They can end up with some or none of any of their parent race's characteristics. Profession: rogue. Specialization: assassin. What the hell? Richter thought. When Natasha Sonaray, Richter corrected himself, had said she was an assassin, he hadn't known it was a formal title. He hadn't even known it was possible to specialize in a profession. Richter didn't even want to think about what abilities or skills the woman might have access to. He had to take her out quickly. The assassin's acrobatic maneuvers may have saved her from the trap, but the last flip brought her perilously close to the edge. In the split second Richter had left before Sonore righted herself, he loosed his arrow. The short distance between Richter's bow and his target didn't allow her any time to dodge. The arrow struck her squarely in the side. The result brought a true smile to Richter's face. The arrow he had chosen was one of the heavy cobalt arrows from the armory. The loss of accuracy was not much of a problem at a range of only a dozen yards or so. The glowing arrow struck the assassin's armor with a small boom. Even more, the heavy quality of the arrow worked just as Richter had hoped, and she was knocked off of her feet. The momentum took her right off of the edge and out of sight. The attack elicited another roar from the warrior and a cheer from Tirad. Richter pointed at the man. Alma, drain him! Futin, find the woman and let me know if she's getting close. His familiar swooped onto Orvin. There was a rumble in the ground suddenly, but there was little noticeable effect other than a faint ripple in the grass that soon faded, so Richter put it out of his head. The fighter's level was too high to be stunned, but that didn't mean the man could simply weather the familiar's attack. He started screaming as soon as Alma clamped onto his head. The physical response of Alma's brain drain seemed to vary, but Richter was happy to see that the pain that was caused stayed uniform. Richter drank in the man's screams and enjoyed watching Orvin's futile struggles. Richter knelt and grabbed the edge of the cliff he was on. He turned around and quickly eased himself over the lip. A short drop down, and then he was on the same level as the two bound men. A soft thud heralded the arrival of the Okami behind him. He turned and ran to where Tirad was caught. "Hey, buddy," Richter said. "You look like crap."
"Good to see you, too," the man said in a pained voice. "If I knew you were coming, I would have gotten pretty for you."
"Well, I'll let it go this time. Besides," Richter said with a vicious smile as he listened to the warrior's screams, "they're playing our song. Let's get you out of here." Richter cast weak, slow heel on his companion and then took stock of the situation. He was standing on the boundary of the sticky material. He didn't want to become trapped as well. Orvin was caught right in the epicenter of the trap, 10 feet away. Tirad was only 4 feet away, but the ground was still covered in adhesive webs. He drew the short sword from his bag and tried to cut one of the strands. It immediately got stuck. He was able to pull it free after several tries, but it was clear that cutting wasn't going to be an option. That's when he heard the tearing noise. The warrior hadn't been idle since being trapped. As soon as his attacker had sicked his pet on him, he started trying to free himself. First, he used the enchantment in his boots. His hope was that the shockwave would shift the tree he was attached to and free him. Unfortunately, the webbing that bound him also effectively tied the tree in place to both the ground and the cliff wall. He groaned in frustration. The trap was too strong for him to escape, but he had invested in a helpful talent since becoming a warrior. Orvin activated Power Up 1. At a cost of 100 stamina, he was able to double his strength for a short period. The problem was, it took a full minute to activate the talent. The screams that were filling the air hadn't just been because of the pain from the Dragonling's attack. It was in frustration and rage that he still wasn't strong enough, even with his talent. His failure to break through meant that what he saw as a flying rat could keep attacking him with impunity. Orvin had always known he would die in battle, but he couldn't stand the injustice of being slaughtered like a trussed sheep. So, cursing the time it would take, he had to use the next level of the talent, Power Up 2. It required a 2-minute startup time and cost of 200 stamina, but his strength increased by 300%. Orvin could only watch his hooded attacker slip down from the cliff above and start talking to the prisoner. When the man pulled back the hood of his cloak, he was shocked to see the face of the mark they had been sent to assassinate. It was such a surprise that he almost lost the concentration needed to maintain his talent. Richter was supposed to be dead. That babbling bitch had said she'd killed him. Orvin swore that if he got out of this situation alive, he would choke the woman to death. The pain he was experiencing was enormous, but another talent he had invested in let him tolerate it. Unlike Power Up, Iron Will was a passive talent. In Orvin's opinion, it was a vital investment for any fighter. It made him more resilient to pain, but, more importantly, increased his resistance to enchantment-type spells. He had invested in it to level 3. While Orvin waited for the startup time of Power-Up 2 to elapse, he glared at the Lord of the Mist Village and imagined the horrors he would inflict on the man.